I'd like now to welcome to the program Sandra Shackle. She is a professor of history emerita at Boise State University, and she's the author of several books, the newest one of which is called Working the Land, the Stories of Ranch and Farm Women in the Modern American West. And she will be speaking at Collected Works Bookstore here in Santa Fe tonight at 6 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Hi, Charlotte.
So how did you undertake this study? What is the breadth and scope of it?
Well, the study started as a request to write a chapter for a book of essays that took a look at women's lives in the modern West. And by that, historians generally mean post-World War II, up to the present.
Right.
And so I thought, oh, great idea, because I had done a dissertation at University of New Mexico in the early 90s, and one of the chapters dealt with the Home Extension Service here and rural people. So I had a little bit of background that way. Then when I began to do research for the chapter for this book to be published by University Press of Kansas, I couldn't find anything on modern women, really, that had been written. So because I have spent a lot of my research time as a social historian doing oral interviews, then it seemed like the logical thing to do was go talk to the farm and ranch women.
And so where did you begin?
Well, I didn't begin with any kind of scientific questions or studies. I had come from this Midwestern agricultural area background, although I had not really grown up on a farm. I'd grown up in a small town surrounded by cornfields and soybean fields. My uncle and his wife and two sons were the last farmers in our family. So I visited the farm as a kid, you know, and enjoyed jumping in the haymow and tromping through the pig pen and all sorts of, you know, things that kids like to do, but never personally lived on it.
Well, and as some of the people in your book point out, it's really a great place for kids to grow up.
Yes, and almost all of the women that I spoke to that are mothers all agreed that it's the best upbringing for children, because it, you know, instills important values, particularly of hard work. You have to milk the cows before you go to school.
And that's one of the things that's interesting about this book, is the changing patterns of work for women in the post-war period, which is due to a lot of factors. Social changes, where women were changing their role purposely, but also economic changes, farm equipment.
Absolutely. In fact, I didn't interview this person, but this was a conversation she had with another oral interviewer, and it was recounted in another book. She was having trouble reaching the pedals on her tractor. And I think she must have had some aches and pains or something, and she went to her doctor, who told her, well, you know, tractors aren't made for women to ride. And he said, no, you shouldn't be riding on a tractor, because that's a man's job. And she realized, well, the tractors were made for men, not women. So she modified her tractor and put blocks on the pedals so that she could reach them without getting a backache.
Simple solution.
Exactly.
Typical of women's minds. But, it's interesting to read this, because one of the hopes of, as you write in the book, or as one of the people says in your book, Working the Land, is that one of the hopes about farm equipment was that it would allow farmers to not have the incredibly hard drudgery of labor and then elevate them to a middle-class status.
Yes, that is part of what was going on after World War II. And ironically, the growth of equipment literally in size and cost came to be a terrible burden for farmers by the 1970s and 80s.
Just because that put them so much into debt.
That's right. In the meantime, women, I want to make clear, as most people probably imagine, women have always worked in the fields. I mean, historically, they always haven't, you know, all around the world. What I discovered was that their stories hadn't been told in great detail, particularly, you know, in the contemporary period. And that's what I was after. I asked them, how has your life changed over the years as you've been on the farm or ranch? How the equipment, the chores, the you know, who raised the children, who did the laundry? I mean, how did all those tasks work out? So I had about a five-page survey that I asked, questions that I ask of all the women, that carried right through to the present, including the women's movement, whether they were aware of it, whether it affected their lives at all. And more than one told me that they weren't particularly aware of it, and they didn't think they personally needed it because they were already equal partners with their spouse.
Well, and that's interesting because some of the women you interviewed really seem like they had wonderful equal partnerships, but then there are others where the man definitely was dominant, and there was one where he bought, even though she thought they had an equal partnership, then he started buying equipment without telling her and things like that.
Exactly. She wasn't too happy about that. Right. That's exactly right. There's almost two faces of agriculture. First of all, historically, agriculture is very patriarchal by nature. And part of that has to do with the physical strength that's needed sometimes to manage animals or to plow or whatever. But even as, since I, this is a book that's focused on the West, 17 Western states, the book doesn't cover all the states, but that's how historians generally consider the West. Its region is about 17 states. And women in the wagons or walking across out west, you know, so forth, their husbands couldn't have succeeded in clearing the trees, for example, or building a soddy, you know, without another pair of hands, and of course the children. For so long, agricultural families were large because they needed those laborers. So children were an important part of farming and ranching as well.
To what extent did the children of the women you interviewed, a lot of whom were kind of grandmother age generation.
Many were.
To what extent did their children continue on in the business, in the family farm?
Well, as you might expect, closer to World War II, there was more of the sons, particularly going into the farming and agricultural business. But in the last generation or two, that's been less so. And a lot of reasons for that. One is the growth of technology in this country has provided many more attractive jobs, less physical labor for people. And so many of their children didn't want to stay on the farm or return to the farm. On the other hand, maybe one out of several would do so. I found that several times. The children appreciated growing up. The women told me this. That they had told their parents they really were glad they were raised on a farm or in a small rural area, but they just couldn't see their future there. And statistics bear that out, because today we're a nation in which less than 2% are listed on census as farm operators, farmer ranch operators.
And, of course, the small family farm is under tremendous economic competition from agribusiness, which produces food cheaply, although it may not be sustainable or healthy or anything else.
I know. That is greatly debated, of course. The push for agribusiness, of course, again, post-World War II and prosperity and so forth, but by the 70s and 80s, big companies were buying out a lot of family farms, and that is continued. I mean, the number of small family farms has continued to decline. But the most recent agricultural census, which is done every 5 years, kind of at an off time, for example, 2002 and then 2007, whereas we have 2010. But the agricultural census are done differently. And some interesting things came out of this last one in 2007, and that is that it was the middle group that has declined the most, the middle-sized American farm. And there are several gradations, I guess, that determine how your farm is judged, from the amount of animals you have or crops you produce or amount of money or amount of land and so forth. So agribusiness continues to be big. Small farms, you know, 400 acres or less, simply continue to persist. And I'm not sure entirely why, except that in this last decade, I would say, we've had a renewed interest in local foods. So the local food movement
Right.
is playing a role.
Farmers markets. farm to table. Mm-hmm. Well, and but also, as you say, there are farmers who are making ends meet through other means,
yes,
through allowing hunting on their land, through doing wage labor off of the farm.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons I think farming has never faded away entirely. Because, again, even before World War II, many women worked off farm. They might be teachers. They might have been clerks in the local rural town, whatever. And this accelerated, you know, as 60s, 70s, and 80s, as the economy became harder for everybody. I mean, urban families, the wife was suddenly going to work because they needed two paychecks. This had been going on already in the farms, as you might imagine, all this time.
Right.
And sometimes the husband or farmer would work off farm and be a teacher himself, and the woman would run the farm during the week, and he'd come home on the weekends, and there might be children involved that were helping her too.
Now, one of the things that is also not surprising was that a lot of women were doing more and more work outside the mm-hmm. house. In other words, they were working in the fields, they were working with animals, they were operating tractors and so on. But that there was not a corresponding increase of men doing dishes or laundry.
That's right. I don't know if that has changed at all in urban families, but...
Oh, it has, definitely, in urban families.
It seemed like my students, you know, they pitch in and do much more than probably their fathers and certainly their grandfathers ever did.
Yeah.
But on the farms, it's still... those inside the house and outside the house were two terms that were used very often. I've interviewed over 50 women in about 15 years since I started this project. And despite the stereotypes of the inside farm wife, many wives work outside and love it. One of the reasons, besides raising children on a farm or ranch, is that they love being outdoors. They love the natural experience with dirt, with soil, with the climate, you know, and the surroundings.
And if they didn't, they probably wouldn't have chosen to be farm wives.
Right. And some didn't. You know, they married into it. Or they fought it at first, or some continue to stay in teaching elementary school, you know. The little bit larger, a little bit more successful family farms could afford to hire some help. Hired help is what my uncle used to call it, the hired hands. That's what he called them. He had some
right.
people working for him.
Of which there are probably fewer now, as... that's not an economically viable way of life.
Yeah, right. Pay would be extremely low.
Yeah.
Which is another reason why smaller farms, maybe, they aren't so economically self-sustaining. Right.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, somebody else is bringing in an income from somewhere else, you know, and they then are able to still stay on the family farm.
We're talking to Sandra Shackle about her book, Working the Land, The Stories of Ranch and Farm Women in the Modern American West. So you interviewed farmers and ranchers, and was there any difference between those two groups, people who worked more with plants and more with animals?
Well, there's a clear difference. With farms, most often you might have animals, but you'd probably have row crops too, wheat or hay or beans or mint or whatever, peanuts. Ranchers, that generally conjures up more land, larger land, and the larger animals, particularly horses and cows, for a herd. You might have horses to work the cattle, but the cattle would be the major source of the ranch's income. A lot of women love to be on horseback and love the ranching life. I interviewed many of them that preferred that, but they have been able to adapt, I would say, 20th and 21st century technology themselves into the tasks they do. If they go out on a roundup or go out every day and repair fence or whatever, they've got something in the crock pot or something in the freezer, or... They might keep the family records, but it's online now. So in many ways, their lives changed drastically from their grandmothers. When I first started this project, I knew I would be interviewing some older women, because I wanted to see those changes right after the war in the 50s and 60s, but I didn't want to limit it to that group. So my youngest interviewee was 24 when I interviewed her, and I think that was 2002, and she was a young Colorado woman working with horses and cattle. She and her husband also have a cattle ranch, or a family cattle ranch, her brother and her dad. And then there's a middle group of women who are married to ranchers or farmers. And you mentioned the term ranch or farm. When I ask a woman to self-identify herself, I said, what do you call yourself? You know, I let them speak, and sometimes I got, I'm just a housewife. I'm just a farm wife. I work, you know, I took care of the children and cooked and cleaned and that sort of thing. Others would say, I'm a farmer. I'm a rancher. I'm a gopher. You know, go to town for parts and whatever. And interesting thing about modern wives is they rarely cook lunch for hired hands anymore because there's fewer of them. But if they do have half a dozen, say, during haying season, they'll go to McDonald's and bring back, you know, fast food for them.
Oh, my goodness.
So not always the big chuck wagon meals,
right.
Although Roundups, I've encountered some Roundups where that still goes on because you do have a big group of people to feed for a couple days when you're branding.
And as you point out in the book, it's a life that makes people strong, resilient, flexible, and very resourceful.
Yes, they are resourceful. When you mentioned, when you asked me about work off the farm, some of them bring in extra income with what's now called agricultural tourism. And it's not unique to America. It's quite popular in Europe, too.
What's that?
Well, in Europe, it's you could rent a farmhouse. You know, you can be touring and you can stay overnight in a farmhouse and a farm meal, you know, be cooked for you and so forth. In America, I think there might be some of that. But I interviewed two women who had bed and breakfast operations. And interestingly, Peggy Monzingo in near Benson, Arizona, she doesn't now, she's pretty elderly now, but she had a bed and breakfast operation. But she used it to for her political activism around agriculture, about the issue between environmentalists and ranchers. And she told me, she said, I almost don't feed them until they sit and listen to me talk about the issues,
what,
you know,
was her
on the
position?
Ranch. Well, she was very anti-environmentalist because she said, who can better take care of their land and their animals than the people who are ranching and farming? And yet we hear, quote, the environmentalists, they often get lumped together in a group as people who think no cows should be grazing on this land. So, you know, I had to sound people out on that, and I didn't take a position, but I learned a lot. There's ground on both sides to be, you know, honored, I think. So bed and breakfast, the hunting. Gretchen Samus up here in northern New Mexico near Cimarron has a historic ranch, the Manly Chase Ranch. He was her great-great-grandfather, and she's inherited that 10,000 acres. And she and her manager partner, Ruby Goble, have been opening the land for hunts for many years.
Sandra Shackle is a professor emerita at Boise State University, and she's the author of several books, including the latest, which is Working the Land, The Stories of Ranch and Farm Women in the Modern American West. It's published by the University Press of Kansas. And she will be speaking tonight at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore here in Santa Fe. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for asking.